While I think that averting a climate catastrophe must be our city's very highest priority, please understand that this is not at the expense of addressing inequality and poverty in our city. Quite the opposite.
In November 2018, Carla Denyer, Green Party councillor in the British city of Bristol, proposed a motion that called on Bristol's mayor to declare a climate emergency. Humans have already caused irreversible climate change, the impacts of which are being felt across the globe, started the motion. And we have to start making structural change every single way we can, now. The motion passed unanimously in the Labour-run council, and so started a wave of climate emergency motions. 822 cities, councils, and jurisdictions across the world have done the same, catching the public mood that environmental groups such as Extinction Rebellion were taking to the streets, and coming just as the IPCC's grim and real warning that we had 12 years to act started to sink into the collective consciousness. We made Carla our Green Politician of 2018. 8 months after her motion, we caught up with her in her flat in Bristol to ask her what inspired her, what the next step is, and how others around the world can follow suit. Hi, Carla, and thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us on the Big Green Politics podcast. You were our politician of 2018, so it's great to have you on the podcast to talk about the reason why we nominated you. And that's the climate emergency movement that you kickstarted in Europe when you proposed its first climate emergency motion late last year. I first want to ask you how you got into politics. What was your moment of political and green awakening that just made you think, right, that's it, I'm going to get involved, I'm going to stand as a councillor?
It was a few different awakenings, actually. My small p political awakening happened at sixth form, where I got involved in Amnesty International, the Stop the War campaign, because it was around the time of the Iraq War, and the Make Trade Fair campaign, which was trying to make fair trade mainstream. But I didn't at all get involved in or interested in party politics, and I wasn't particularly aware of green issues at that time. Later on, I went to university and studied engineering, and halfway through my degree, I had the epiphany of how serious climate change is, and I decided pretty much straight away that I wanted to dedicate my life to tackling it in some way. And I started off doing that through engineering. I was halfway through an engineering degree, so I, at that point, started researching how can I best use my engineering skills. After I graduated, I worked in the renewable energy industry for about 6 years in Bristol. And that was fine for a bit, but it sometimes felt a bit frustrating because, as one of my colleagues put it, we're only changing the world one wind turbine at a time. The work that I was doing for the engineering firm was worthwhile, but we were basically, it was a consultancy, so we were helping wind farm developers build wind farms slightly more efficiently so that they would get a bit more money out of it, which is obviously a good thing because the more profitable they are, the more will be built. But it felt a bit too slow and incremental for me. So at the same time as working there, I had become more small p politically active in Bristol, getting involved in specific single issue campaigns on environment and social justice. And through those, I met a few people who were active in the Green Party, became very close friends with them, and they slowly worked on me, basically, and convinced me that the Green Party was different to all the others and that I should look again.
What inspired you to propose this climate emergency motion? Because it's the first in Europe, but it's not the first in the world, right?
That's right, yeah. So there were three climate emergency declarations in the world before mine. The first was Darebin in Australia, and then there were two in the US, Hoboken in New Jersey and Berkeley, California. And I heard about those three from environmental activists in Bristol right at the beginning of the Extinction Rebellion movement when it was really only just getting going. And I knew one or two people who were Green Party members or other environmental activists I knew that were also involved in that. And they told me about this concept of a climate emergency declaration. And I saw that it had promise because it was very simple. And I thought that that simplicity might help me to get other parties on board and appeal to the widest possible set of people when proposing a motion. Because, of course, Green Party councillors have been proposing motions saying that cities should be reducing their carbon footprints for decades. Why exactly my motion on this passed when other similar ones in the past haven't, I'm not exactly sure. I think there was an element of zeitgeist. So we just had the alarmingly hot summer in 2018, the IPCC report about the impact of 1.5 degrees of global warming had just come out. And as I mentioned, the early actions of the Extinction Rebellion movement had got going. And all of that had happened within a month or two before I proposed my motion. So I think partly it was me borrowing a good idea from councils elsewhere in the world. Partly it was all of that other stuff and the timing of it just being really good. Mm. And hopefully it was a little bit my skill in writing the motion as well.
Absolutely. I love this cross-pollination of ideas between Greens across the globe that happened here. That's actually exactly what we're trying to do with this podcast, or support. What exactly is a climate emergency motion, though?
So the principle of declaring a climate emergency is that that's the first step. So some of the criticism it gets is that it's just symbolic and it's just words. And the principle of declaring a climate emergency is that the first step is to declare the climate emergency, and then you have to take bold action to tackle it. So my climate emergency motion and most of the ones that followed didn't lay out exactly what needs to be done and how. The way I think of it is actually similar to the 12-step program that's used by organisations like Alcoholics Anonymous, in that the first step is acknowledging that you have a problem and that you can't deal with it on your own. And I mean, I think humanity's relationship with carbon emissions is a bit like an addiction, so it does apply quite well. Mm. The first stage is saying we are in a crisis, we need to change something in our lives. And then once you've made that declaration, then all of your other decisions have to flow from that. Specifically, my climate emergency motion called for four main things from the mayor. We have a mayoral system in Bristol, so motions have to be worded in that way. It was to call on the mayor to declare a climate emergency, to commit to the city going carbon neutral by 2030, to lobby national government for the powers and funding necessary to achieve that, because the council can do a lot of decarbonisation on its own with its current powers, but it won't be able to get all of the way there. Mm-hmm. And finally, it asked the mayor to report back within 6 months with a plan for how to decarbonise. And those deadlines of the 2030 decarbonisation and reporting back with a plan were quite important to me, because they were what helped make the motion not just nice words, but that it would result in action.
Mm. But the question is, how do we stop it from staying just words, and for also being a means for politicians who don't plan to act with any urgency on the climate to look good? Specifically, I'm talking about Canada declaring a climate emergency and then the day after approving the expansion of the Trans Mountain pipeline. And similarly, you know, many councils in the UK have declared a climate emergency because at this stage they kind of have to, but often the motions were very watered down. And they were also often followed by total, unashamed business as usual.
I think that's a very good question. And I agree that there is definitely a risk of politicians jumping on this bandwagon because, frankly, they're being embarrassed into it by the Greens and by environmental campaigners outside of party politics. And we do need to keep up the pressure on them to practice what they preach. Mm. I don't have the definitive solution, but I agree that it's really important. So when I wrote my motion, as you can imagine, I had no idea of the impact it would have. Mm. I didn't know that it was going to start this tidal wave of declarations across the country where now hundreds of UK councils have declared. And so when I was writing my motion, it didn't even cross my mind to think, what do we do if hundreds of Tory-run councils have approved climate emergencies and then don't look like they're going to act on it? That was just an unimaginable future. So, yeah, I don't know exactly, but I think Green Party councillors who've more than doubled their numbers in the UK in the last few months have a big role to play in keeping up the pressure where they're not in the administration, which is still the case on most councils. They can still provide important pressure, holding the administration's feet to the fire on what they've said.
It's such a useful tool, isn't it, for politicians and activists to use to push for action and to say to those in power, look, you declared a climate emergency and now you're doing this. That's just not compatible. It also highlights hypocrisy, doesn't it?
Yeah, if nothing else, then the climate emergency declarations are a lever that Greens in the councils and activists outside can use to say, you said this, why are you doing that? I hope it'll be much more than that. What it should be, of course, is that each of the councils that has declared then needs to set a really ambitious decarbonisation plan and really put it at the top of their priority list. But at the very least, even where administrations are really disappointing and don't appear to be doing that, it's hopefully a tool for campaigners from outside.
Definitely. And in terms of Bristol itself, as the first climate emergency motion in Europe, everyone's kind of looking at the city for what the follow-up will be, right? So it's been 8 months since the declaration, and the mayor, as specified in the motion, has to present a report for how to reach the carbon neutral 2030 target that you set out in the motion. So he just presented that a couple of weeks ago. What did you think of his report? We'll link to it below for everyone listening.
My view on the Bristol Mayor's plan is mixed, to be honest. It has some good stuff in it. So the report came out about 8 months after my motion. The Green councillors hadn't waited for that. We produced our own report about 2 months after the motion came out with our suggestions. And we were pleased to see that some of those made it into the Mayor's plan. For example, we borrowed an idea that we really liked from Oslo, which is run jointly by Labour and Greens, where they have a carbon budget, which basically means any major decision that the city council makes, it has to make sure that the money stacks up, the financial budget, and that the carbon stacks up, and that every decision they make is either reducing carbon emissions or at least not making them worse. And if it is making them worse, then it has to go back to the drawing board. And that would be completely transformational. So that idea's in there, that's great. And then there's a few kind of no-brainer ideas like putting solar panels on council housing. That said, administrations in Bristol have been proposing that for 10 years or more and it somehow hasn't quite happened yet. So yeah, there's some good stuff. However, ultimately, it just isn't a sufficiently emergency-oriented response. It doesn't go far enough, and it doesn't go fast enough. It, for a start, it isn't a decarbonisation plan, which is what the motion called for. It's a plan to produce a decarbonisation plan. It talks about setting up boards that will meet next year and commissioning strategies for decarbonisation next year. Now, bear in mind that when my motion passed, I reiterated the warning from the IPCC that we had just 12 years left to take bold action. Nearly one of those years has already passed, and the mayor is proposing to wait another year before even deciding what to do about it. That's just not good enough. So the feedback that we've been giving fairly robustly is along the lines of what I've said, and specifically that while there is a place for boards and strategies and long-term plans, and I'm not saying that we shouldn't be doing those, there's a lot of obvious decarbonisation strategies where reports have been commissioned, other cities have already done them, we already know how to do them. We don't need another report. We can just get started now. So some of those things even have cross-party support. Surprisingly, things like massive investment in transport infrastructure to make walking, cycling and public transport easier. All parties in Bristol have already backed that as part of the cross-party working that followed after my motion. everyone knows that that's a key part of reducing carbon emissions, so let's just get on with it.
And even in that full council meeting when the mayor released his report, the Labour-run administration voted down, well, watered down significantly, a green motion to divest the City Council pension fund from fossil fuels and into green projects, right? That just seems just incredible to me.
Yeah, so my colleague, one of the other Green councillors on Bristol City Council, Martin Foda, put forward a motion which was calling for the Avon Pension Fund, which provides the pensions for Bristol City Council employees, but also several other local authorities nearby, to withdraw its investments from fossil fuels. And he actually put forward a similar motion 4 years earlier. And back then, Labour amended it to basically remove all of its teeth, all of its deadlines, all of its firm outcomes, and just make it, we will think about divestment along with other options. And that was frustrating 4 years ago. But after a climate emergency declaration, to see Labour do almost exactly the same thing again was infuriating. Mm. And we saw the same when my climate emergency motion passed in November last year. In the very same meeting, there happened to be something on the agenda that gave me the opportunity to bring up Bristol Airport expansion, which Bristol's Labour mayor supports. And I challenged him on it, and he came out really, really strongly in favour of airport expansion, and quite angrily and defensively so, I would say. And that was in the same meeting where he supported the climate emergency declaration. So it's things like that that cause my worry. Mm. That the other parties, although they're getting on board with the declarations, they haven't quite made the leap to what that means they need to act differently and decide differently.
If you're enjoying this episode, check out our previous news episodes about green politics around the world, and also our interviews with green politicians, activists, and experts.
I think there's also a kind of psychological process that's happening now where this radical view takes a while to take hold, but it's slowly sinking into people's brains, politicians' brains, especially as there's this pressure inside and outside government. But ultimately, there is a fundamental conflict, isn't there, between this idea of growth that other parties are subscribed to. You know, if it's going to create jobs like expanding an airport or building a road, they're always going to find it hard to go against that, even if they appear and want to take the climate seriously.
Yeah, I agree. I think the worldview of all other politicians is still so substantially different from that of green politicians that sometimes we talk past each other. Mm. And it's hard to get across that it's not, acknowledging the climate emergency isn't an extra thing that you add on top of your pile of priorities. It's completely changing the lens.
That's a very Naomi Klein phrase, this changes everything. But it's so true. Like, once you know and you face the challenge, you have to reassess everything you're doing. And how can people support this? If they're not politicians, how can they support these further steps after declaring climate emergency?
Well, putting pressure on your politicians is the first obvious step. So if you live in an area that has already declared a climate emergency or is on the brink of doing so, please write to your elected representatives, your councillors, and let them know how strongly you feel about it. I'd really encourage you to do that. You'd be surprised how much impact it has. And then if you're in an area that hasn't yet declared a climate emergency and it's not on the horizon, then I think you can learn from what's happened elsewhere. So across the UK, after my motion passed, there were basically two mechanisms for how it passed elsewhere. One was existing Green Party councillors on other councils heard about my motion through the press and social media, and most of them literally copy-pasted my motion, changed the town name and submitted it. And I was very happy for them to do that. The other mechanism by which local authorities were declaring climate emergencies is where there weren't Greens on the council, but there were campaigners working from outside, and they would typically identify councillors from whichever party that they thought were most likely to be persuaded. They'd ask for meetings with them, encourage them to put something forward, and then support them in lobbying the other councillors until they thought they had a majority, and that could be councillors that were part of the administration, or it could be opposition councillors like myself, because although most decisions on local councils are made by the ruling party, there's always a mechanism for backbench councillors or opposition councillors to put forward proposals through motions at full council a few times a year. That's how I did it, and that's how a lot of others have done it since.
Speaking of local politics, it seems that this level of government is very important for the Greens. We very much espouse this idea of, you know, think global, act local, though we marry that with acting nationally and internationally too, of course. It all has to happen together. But I do think that ultimately change is enforced and takes place locally. And when things happen on a local level, that's when you get people on board. That's when it empowers people and takes them along with you. It's going to have to be something that communities and people are part of. It can't be imposed from, you know, from the top. And I think partly why the climate emergency movement has been so powerful is because individuals have been coming together in small groups, whether that's their Green Party or not, and actually made change happen in their areas. And that's countering a really important tendency of apathy and hopelessness that most people feel when they think about climate change, paralysing, disempowering feeling that doesn't lead to action. So I think this motion, this movement, exemplifies that environmental politics isn't just about, you know, international climate treaties setting targets that no one will actually keep to and that we don't have a say over, though we need those two, obviously. At the end, taking action locally can make a difference. Having said that, ultimately, as your motion states, the problems are so vast and so systemic. So in that context, can one city like Bristol actually make a difference?
Yeah, that's a good point. So in the debate on my motion, the leader of the Conservative group got up and said, "I agree with your aims, but I think you're wrong to focus on local government. This needs to happen at a national and international level." And my response to him was, "No, you've misunderstood." I'm not saying that this should only happen at a local level. I was proposing it at a local level because I wasn't seeing sufficient action happening at the UK national government level or internationally. And so I was using the levers of power that I had access to at a local level as a councillor. So I think local is definitely an important part of it, but it's certainly not the only part. The advantage that starting the climate action at a local level has, though, is that although local government, I think, can sometimes have a reputation for being a little bit sort of backward compared to national government, it actually sometimes is much more fleet of foot and has more opportunity for innovation because it's smaller. And it's more closely connected to the people it serves. It's sometimes more possible for local government to run interesting pilots, for example, than a big national one that would probably require years of preparation and consultation. And then if it works at a local level, then other councils can follow suit, and then sometimes government follows suit a little while later. So I think the two advantages of doing it at a local level are, if enough local authorities declare a climate emergency, it puts pressure on the national government, which it has done here in the UK, although more still needs to be applied. But the other is that there is plenty that local councils can be getting on with in the meantime. So it is both a symbolic lobbying action and a concrete let's change things here action at the same time.
Well, what you've done is super inspiring, Carla, and it did create a ripple effect that contributed to this green wave that we've seen already in Europe and across the world, and that we'll continue to see. What would you advise anyone listening about replicating this? Do you just copy and paste the motion? How does it work?
They're certainly very welcome to. Honestly, I've never been happier to have my homework copied. Yeah, so if you're in the UK, then the Association of Green Councillors has put together a really useful resource pack with my motion and some of the other motions that might be more applicable to you, because I'm in a fairly large unitary city authority, but there's other ones that are more suited to town or borough. And there's lots of other resources in there, like example press releases, example speeches, example decarbonisation plans. You can join the Association of Green Councillors if you're a councillor or if you're an aspiring councillor. In terms of what Greens can do outside the UK, I'm not as well connected to Greens outside the UK, but what I do understand is that the Green Party of England and Wales is going to be setting up a climate emergency campaign website, which will include some of those same resources, and that'll, unlike the Association of Green Councillors one, that'll be a public website, so you'll be able to access it from anywhere. And also feel free to check out Bristol Green Party's website, which is just bristolgreenparty.org.uk, because if you type climate emergency into the search box on that website, you'll find all of the articles and press releases we've done about climate emergency in the last 9 months, including the full wording of my motion.
Yeah, and there's also the report called Change Starts Now.
Yes, thank you for reminding me. Yeah, so the report I mentioned that the Green Councillors brought out about 2 months after our motion passed, which doesn't claim to be a step-by-step guide to exactly how to decarbonise, because we were in a hurry to produce this in a couple of months, and we're just 11 part-time councillors with limited staff support. So Bristol definitely still needs to produce a detailed plan, and with the help of the expert officers in the council, I hope that'll be coming sooner rather than later. But in the meantime, yeah, we produced this short report called Change Starts Now, which collates a couple of dozen ideas that we've seen elsewhere, whether it's through reports by great organisations like the Centre for Alternative Technology, Zero Carbon Britain, C40 Cities, or just what other cities have done. So we think that that is a great starting point. And again, feel free, that's all publicly available. It's a PDF on our website, so feel free to pinch that.
Thank you so much for joining us, Carla, and for all you've done on this issue.
Cool. Thanks. Nice to talk to you.
All right, folks, that's our show. You can follow us and show us some love on Twitter at Big Green Pulp Pod. You can find us on any podcast apps, iTunes, Spotify, and SoundCloud.